Junior Afternoon made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. Welcome back to Junior Afternoon. And with me in the studio now is Jesse Post, who's head of alumni relations over at UAS, and also David Talman, who's a professor of biology there. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Jesse, tell me a little bit about what's going on in the world of alumni relations.
Yeah, well, I'll just tell you a little bit about UAS Alumni and Friends first, and then we'll pass it on over to Dave.
Sure.
But UAS Alumni and Friends is a nonprofit. We're an open membership organization, and we build lifelong relationships with alumni and supporters of the university, and really just try to create a sense of community among our supporters and alums.
And a big part of that is sort of organizing these sorts of events, lecture series, things like that, that allow people to connect with the university, right?
Yeah. That's one thing that we have membership. We build membership. We facilitate communication between alumni and the university. We raise money for scholarships. We try to leverage our alumni voice. Alums are really important, play an important role in advocating for the university and its future right now. And then, like you said, we host events and programs that bring people together for networking, for continued learning. And we really like to highlight the impactful things that are happening at UAS, which is why we're partnering with Professor Dave Talman so he can tell us a little bit more about his interesting work with salmon.
Yeah, right. So, Dave, welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming in. And tell me about it. This, it's so interesting. There's the flyer here that shows the fish weir at Auk Creek. It's right by houses, and it's just sort of in the middle of, sort of a settled environment, right? Often when we think about these fish weirs, I know biologists who are, out in the middle of the wild,
right,
and they've got a canvas tent set up, and that's it, and they're counting fish all summer, that kind of stuff. This is a different environment than
This is very much an urban weir.
Yeah.
And the thing that's unique about it is that it's a permanent weir structure, so the ones you're referring to usually are temporary weirs that are put up and taken down seasonally. And so this is a really robust weir that's been in operation in its current form for 40 years.
Wow.
And then there were some more temporary structures before that. And the reason that it's so exciting as a biologist is that it's able to capture all the fish coming in and going out. So you get a complete census of all the out migrants and the returning spawning adults, as well as trout and char that follow along to eat their babies. And so if you're interested in those sorts of things, salmon and their interaction with trout, it's a great spot to do research.
A normal weir typically is just capturing outgoing? Is that it? Or
coming
incoming?
Back. Okay. Yeah, the adults coming back is typical for most places.
Yeah.
There are some exceptions, but that's the rule.
Yeah. And what made this different? Yeah. Why did this have this permanent structure?
The place has a huge, long history. It dates back to, a cannery that was out in Auk Bay back in the early 1900s. And then the territorial sportsmen got interested in having some hatchery operations out there, and then they wanted to count success of those operations. And then eventually NOAA, or National Marine Fisheries Service, which is under NOAA, got control of it, and they set up ever more elaborate and permanent structures. And over time, it just gained prominence as a way to learn management information about our salmon.
Yeah. So. And it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong with that, it seems like that must be a really large data set to have this continuous data for 40 years, right? That must
it's pretty much unparalleled, and I would say unequaled anywhere that I know of, because there's multiple species of salmon and trout, char associated with them, and all the fish are counted completely every day. So you have not only the number of fish, but the days that they're passing. So you can look at seasonal changes and long-term changes, like the effects of climate change on their run timing. And so it's just a really powerful data set for wild populations, which is really rare.
Right. So the big question, mm-hmm. right? So what's happening? What's going on with
yeah.
this?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
I mean, we obviously are hearing so much about climate change, and it seems like most of the news isn't great. What's happening in the world of fish in Auk Bay?
Yeah. So for the fish that go in and out of Auk Creek, the long-term patterns have been that there's earlier and earlier migration, and that ranges from some that are changing maybe just a wee little bit over the last 40 years to things like coho, which are now spawning about 3 weeks earlier than they did back when they started collecting data. So there's earlier migration in general across all the species and life
and
history
stages. Is that
a
creeping kind of thing, or is it? Is it not spiky?
It kind of spikes, but the average trend is earlier across the board. And so that makes sense if you think about the fact that these are what they call ectotherms, and so their developmental rates and their metabolisms are affected by ambient temperature. So if temperatures on average are increasing, although they're spiky, on average they're increasing, that's going to speed up development. Their life history stages are going to be quicker, and so you would predict what we're seeing.
Yeah, right.
And then the other thing is that in terms of the adults, we're seeing a more compressed range of dates over which they migrate over time. So if you look at the first salmon to come in the middle of summer and the last salmon to come in the fall, over time the range of dates over which those salmon are present has also decreased, which also makes some sense if you think about it. If you're imposing selection, that is making them earlier and earlier in the migration, you decrease variation in those traits. Darwin talked about that 150 years ago, and that's what's going on with these populations.
Yeah. And that's must be pretty satisfying as a scientist to have this really complete data set to look at. And as you said, like, that's what we would predict. Often you don't have this very complete data set that allows you to show a direct correlation between bigger climate events, bigger things,
for sure,
and a very specific population.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing data set, and it allows us to say things that people can't say elsewhere because they don't have the continuous data, they don't have the detailed data that we have available. And so there's actually a lot of scientists, not just here in Juneau, but elsewhere, who use these data for analyses because they are so powerful and useful if you want to gain a broader perspective.
Are there canary in the coal mine kind of things happening with this population?
So I would say, you know, the last few years haven't been great, but it's really hard to tease apart because there have been low years in the past as well. And so I wouldn't say that, you know, we're jumping up and down and alarmed, but the last few years haven't been great. And, you know, fishermen around here could tell you that as
well. Yeah, right.
You know, the salmon are amazing. And so I continue to hope that they're going to be resilient and rebound because they have this incredible capacity to reproduce in large numbers. A single individual could produce hundreds of babies. And so I remain optimistic, but cautiously so.
What measurements happen when with the weir? So the weir counts, but do you also select individuals and do sort of averages of weight and size and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a host of different studies, you know, tens of theses have been done down at the weir. So the weir, there's a lot of collaboration between National Marine Fisheries Service, ADFG, UAS, UAF. It's a real nexus for collaboration, and it has been over time. But there have been genetic analyses that have been done, weight length, like you alluded to. So there's some detailed information, growth rates from scales and things like that. So there's a ton of detailed information that's collected in addition to this.
I guess one thing I was wondering about was, is there an average? You know, there's a kind of an interesting, if you look at the winners of the Salmon Derby over the past 3 years.
Yeah, I've seen this data,
And, you know, you see these monster salmon that they were pulling out, and now a 20-pound fish can win the salmon, or something like that, can win the Salmon Derby. It used to be they were pulling out 50 and 60-pounders, right?
Yeah.
Is that seen in this population, or is this population different in some way?
We've seen some evidence of that in a couple of the species that are there. That's generally the trend that you see across a lot of places in Alaska, the one you alluded to with smaller adult fish. And there's various things that people ascribe that to. So, you know, certainly it's possible with fishing pressure, you know, removing the largest individuals before they reproduce. Also, you know, changes in climate and growth conditions in the ocean. Probably a big deal with that as well. We've seen some evidence, but it's not dramatic with respect to the length of the fish or the weight of the fish.
What's the most abundant species that's there?
Pink salmon,
it's
by
pinks.
Far.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And generally, they can be super abundant there. So we can have, you know, tens of thousands in a good summer. And this summer, we've got around 2,000. So it's not a huge year for pinks there.
But are all five salmon species running up that?
There's three species that are native to it. So there's sockeye, silver, coho, and pink or humpies that are in the creek.
And then dollies, trout, all kinds of stuff like that as
well. They generally are following the adults of those species to eat their eggs or eat the babies on the way out to sea as well.
Right, right. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, this is happening – the talk on this is happening on the 26th.
Yeah,
is that right?
next Thursday at 7 p.m. in the Egan Lecture Hall.
Very cool. And again, kind of covering some of what we just talked about, but a whole lot more as well. Are there other areas that you're specifically wanting to cover in the talk?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about some recent work we've done using environmental DNA to try to figure out if we can count fish by essentially collecting water samples. So that's been a real explosive area in science.
What does that mean?
Well, essentially what you do is you go out and you collect a water sample and filter the DNA out of that water sample.
Just like there's free fish DNA floating around in there?
Like
I see.
We're all sort of exuding DNA as well, right? So CSI stuff.
Let's sample it in the studio.
Yes, you could. Yes. You might not want to, but you could.
But yeah, okay. So it's floating around in the water.
Right. So salmon slime, they slough those cells that contain their DNA. You collect the DNA from a water sample, filter that water sample, amplify that DNA, and then use what's called quantitative PCR, a technique to figure out how many fish are represented in that sample. And we've had some luck using that to interpret how many fish are upstream. And the reason we're able to do this in Ott Creek is because we have these detailed counts every day of how many fish we've released upstream. So we know the truth and can see whether or not we can estimate it with these samples. And it's worked remarkably well.
This weir, it completely cuts off the outfall of Salmon Lake, of Ott Lake.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And so that's fascinating. Yeah. Every single – there's not a fish that can get by it without
– No. Yeah. And another cool thing about it that people may not appreciate is that a lot of those temporary weirs is that they blow out when there's big flows.
Sure.
But that's when most fish move, is when there's a lot of flow,
either
out or in. And so that's the beauty of this weir, is that it stays strong and still allows us to count all those fish.
And there's not a mortality issue with fish with a weir like that?
No.
Not a significant thing? Yeah. No. They just hang out.
They hang out. they're very patient with us.
Yeah. Very cool. Are there predators that have figured that out a little bit?
Yeah. There's one bear that seems to be coming down there fairly commonly these days.
We can let that happen. That's fine.
And there's an otter that has popped up a couple times. It's been a little cagey to deal with.
Yeah. They can be tricky, those otters.
For sure.
Well, really cool. Thanks for kind of giving us a little bit of a preview about the talk, Dave.
Yeah,
really fascinating stuff. Jess, anything else you want to cover here? We're gonna go to a very special little feature here in just a minute. But I just
wanted to add that, you know, Dave's oversees marine biology students who work at the weir. And so when he talks about the partnership, there's a student intern component to collecting all this data and to ensure that this program still exists. Private support is needed, and this is an unpaid. So his students are out there all summer long, and this is a position that's unpaid, but private donations really support the internship program. And so if you're interested in ensuring that this work continues, there is a fund that you can contribute to. So that's also a piece of this, is that, you know, there isn't funding other than private support, and so we need your support to keep this going.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, as I said, the next thing I want to talk to is this special edition of Foodie Friday. As you know, we do Foodie Friday here, and today we've got Foodie Friday with Jesse Post and Dave Tallman here from UAS. And so this Foodie Friday is, of course, very apropos. It's about salmon. So tell me about this recipe that you sent our way.
Yeah, well, this my mom was a wildlife biologist at Fish and Game, and this recipe actually was something she used to cook when I was a kid, and I loved it. And so it's actually, I think, a recipe from Fish and Game, and it's basically a blueberry sauce that you I like to throw in wild blueberries, and you roast the salmon with some mustard and butter, and then you just whip up this blueberry sauce with raspberry vinaigrette and wild blueberries and blueberry jam, and then you cut up some shallots or onions and you mix that in the sauce. So it's really simple, pretty quick. And
there's a little
mustard
sauce that goes with it as well that goes on. You bake it in the mustard sauce.
Yeah, so you bake the fish with the mustard, and then I think the berry sauce is a nice complement. So when the fish comes out, you just pour that over the top. So it's kind of got the sweet and savory.
It's got a little bit of butter, it's got a little bit of shallots or onions, blueberry, as you said. You can use preserves if you don't have fresh blueberries, but you can use preserves.
Yep.
But of course, fresh blueberries, we all know.
Yeah, we've all got a bunch in our freezer.
Trump preserves anytime. And then the raspberry vinegar. All right. Well, Jesse, thanks for bringing that in. That sounds delicious. We'll do it with the next I'll do it. I'm going to try that with the next salmon I cook up. That's great. That's Foodie Friday for today. You didn't contribute much, man.
Sorry.
I'm sure he's got a recipe in his back pocket, though.
The simpler, the better, is what I say.
But you're giving the talk. You're giving the lecture. Yeah, that's bad. You'll do your work there. You got to focus on that. Thanks to both of you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And again,
the talk is happening next Thursday, September 26th. It's at 7 p.m. and it's at the UAS campus, Egan Lecture Hall in room 112. And if you want to find out more, maybe go to UAS Alumni.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can Google UAS alumni, or if you want to watch, you're not able to participate, and next Thursday you can watch it online on UAS's YouTube channel.
All right.
So it'll
cool.
be recorded or watch it live.
All right, Jesse, Dave, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.